Hi, this is Pastor Greg, and you're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at ChosenGenerationRadio.com. That's Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glass.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for him World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Sexual predators and comprehensive sex education both break down inhibitions. That's what they start with. They also gain trust with the child and then slowly start to get them towards sexual activity.
Anything goes. You are teaching children adult child sex. You're teaching transgender issues. And, you know, children are moldable and influenced by that.
They said, okay, now we need you and your team to be able to explain what homosexuality is to a four-year-old student.
To introduce this kind of material at that age, frankly, it's child abuse.
You're going to teach our children that it's okay for any two children of any age, of any sex, to have sexual intercourse with each other as long as two components are present. One's using a condom and they both give consent. Did I hear that correctly?
It's not a neutral venue. There's no such thing, okay? The schools are doing your job. They are discipling your children, but they're not discipling them in the faith of Jesus Christ.
It's only the exceptional child that even survives that system. Most do not survive. Most have not survived.
They believe that children are sexual from birth and that they deserve and have the right to be sexually active and to seek sexual pleasure. And if anyone is stopping them from that, then you are judging and oppressing them.
Even kindergarten now, they're wanting to teach them more and more perverse information and acts and put that into the children's minds. And once that poison is in a child's mind, it doesn't leave. They'll always remember what they learned. And it's by design, it's orchestrated.
In my humble opinion, it will be worse before it gets better.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any difference. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear, even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com, coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits, and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
Trilogy joins us, and I want to welcome John Mooney to the program. John, welcome. Good to have you with me. Thanks for being here.
Pastor, thank you very much for the invitation. Always good to be here.
Well, there's a lot happening with regards to, I know we have a lot of focus and attention on what's happening in Israel, as I believe that we need to be concerned about what's happening there and the parallels between what's gone on there and the threat to our country. But that doesn't diminish in any way, shape, or form the greatest threat to our country, which I believe is the CCP. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I believe China is our ideological and mortal enemy. The CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, is sort of an oxymoron. They're not communists in the sense that Lenin was a communist, in the sense that Marx was a communist. This is pure power politics. The dictator of China, Xi Jinping, has done more to reverse the trends of modernization in China than anyone ever since Mao Zedong took over. His whole goal is to maintain power, get rich, and make sure that there is never, never any dissent against him or against his party. So it's not the kind of communism where they all share their property and talk about glory to communism. It's a much more mercantile and mercenary outlook on life. Xi Jinping has been tremendously successful in shaping the rest of the world's opinion about him and about China. And we saw it again earlier this month when he visited San Francisco for the Asian Summit PAC, and Joe Biden went to kowtow, that's a Chinese term, to him. And here were the things that the Chinese insisted on. We want Americans to line the streets of San Francisco as Xi Jinping moves from the airport to the place where he was staying, and we want them to wave Chinese flags. No American flags should be seen while Xi Jinping is passing. And so they said, okay. And then the Chinese said, also, you've got to clean up your filthy streets in San Francisco. I mean, you just have homeless people, you have garbage, you have people defecating in the streets. We don't want to see any of that stuff. And so pretty much like the Soviets used to do when there was a holiday coming up.
Right.
Police just went out. These are the police that the mayor of San Francisco hates and wants to defund. The police of San Francisco went out and rousted everybody who was living in the streets, cleaned the place up, hosed it all down, and said, is that good enough for you, Mr. Xi? And, so there was that. And then, to top it all off, that evening, all the CEOs from high-tech companies went to a dinner in honor of Xi Jinping and gave him a standing ovation, which I suppose is better than actually just kneeling, which is what they were supposed to be doing, I think. But, so Xi Jinping has been tremendously successful. And yes, he is the greatest threat to American democracy in the world.
At the same time, there's a lot of undercurrent in his country that he continues to try to oppress, because my sources tell me that the economy in China is hemorrhaging tremendously. And there are a lot of folks over there that are experiencing that hemorrhaging. And that is creating some instability in his empire.
Well, yes, you're absolutely right, Pastor. Xi Jinping made two huge, epical errors in recent years. The first is he actually took a lesson from the capitalists and said, what's the one secure investment that we can do to make sure that people are happy and that there's never any challenges to our party and that we can stay in control forever. People like to have their own home. People want to own their own home. That's not just in America. That's in China as well. And so the Communist Party of China began to underwrite loans to construction companies, huge construction companies. Millions and millions of apartment buildings were being constructed. And here's the problem. When people don't have enough of their own money to buy an apartment, the apartment stands empty. And there are now miles and miles and hundreds and thousands of miles of empty apartment blocks across China. Yeah. Nobody's paying rent on them, of course. And the people that built them at great expense are now saying, hey, help us out here. We need something to stay afloat. And the party is saying, hey, not our problem. You build it. You live with it. So that was the first problem. The second problem was Xi Jinping decided that the virus that was created in the Wuhan Virological Lab, and Wuhan, by the way, is a city of 11 million people that nobody had ever heard of before.
Right.
But the virus was created on purpose in the Wuhan Virological Lab. And once it started to spread, because it had already taken over Wuhan, and then the party said, you know, here's good ideological purity at work. The party said to 10,000 residents of Wuhan who were infected with this virus, go travel abroad. Here, we're going to give you plane tickets.
Yep.
Go wherever you want. Pretend it's for business. Pretend it's for education. Pretend it's to see family members, whatever. Here are some tickets. Go travel abroad. Well, of course, they spread the disease all around the world, and we know what the result of that was. Xi Jinping, however, decided, I don't really believe in these vaccines that everybody's talking about. So the best way to stop this virus is keep everybody inside their homes. Don't let them leave. Don't let them go shopping. Don't let them see other people. Don't let them go take their children to school. Just stay in your home, which was okay, I guess, for the first 2 or 3 days. But after that, you run out of food. And so what did the Chinese army do? They barricaded people in their own homes. They put steel bars up and wooden pieces of wood across the door, nailed them shut, and said, don't come out.
Yep.
Thousands of people starved to death in China in their own homes because of Xi Jinping's program, which he brilliantly called Zero COVID.
Well, and I would suggest, John, because Nan Sue and I did some deep dives into this back in, I think it was 2020, early part of 2020, but there were 7.6 million cell phones over there that went dark. And as you know, the cell phone, I mean, they require, everyone has to have a cell phone. That's one of the ways they track their populace. And all of a sudden, over the course of about 6 months, 7.6 million cell phones went dark. And we had reports that crematoriums over there were running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, disposing of the bodies.
Well, not only that, but there was a waiting line. There was a waiting line of dead people to wait to be burned up.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were out in the streets and people could see it and people could smell it. It was a disaster of, I would say, almost Stalin-esque proportions, but it never got reported.
Well,
Why didn't it get reported, John?
I reported it.
And the answer is the mainstream media in our country and most of Western world was too afraid to report what they knew to be true. The WHO, the WHO, the World Health Organization, which is run by the UN but really reports to China, said, well, we can't call this the Wuhan flu. We can't call this the Chinese virus. Let's call it something that nobody understands whatsoever. Let's call it COVID. I mean, that's like starting a new word. Let's call it Schmigglehop. And the mainstream media, which is supposed to investigate things and report on what it knows to be true, said, okay, whatever you say.
Yeah.
And if you said the Chinese virus, if you called it the Wuhan flu, you were a racist.
Yep.
Which is, of course, the new word for everything that nobody likes. If you do something that I don't like, you're a racist. That's the new term. And again, the media just bowed down, said, whatever you say. The Center for Disease Control in Washington said, well, that's what the WHO said. I mean, it's almost like a rock opera, the WHO.
Yeah.
But, you know, and we didn't use our common sense and we didn't use our God-given democracy.
Right.
To say, no, this is wrong.
How significant was the Hong Kong decision in all of this? I mean, they essentially went in and destroyed Hong Kong's economy. Hong Kong was a massive economic producer for China. I mean, they went in and they, you know, took control, so to speak, and they pretended that they didn't have any. But Hong Kong economically fed the beast. How significant was the destruction of and really the deconstruction of Hong Kong relative to the economic challenges the CCP is facing today?
Well, Pastor, I would say that it was an experiment that China was trying. They wanted to see what would happen if they essentially, as you put it, you know, destroyed what made Hong Kong Hong Kong.
Hong Kong was a center of international business and prosperity. Every major country in the world had offices in Hong Kong because they knew, as you pointed out, that was the key to China. And when the Chinese party sent its soldiers in, not even police, soldiers, into a city that it in theory did not control, nobody said anything. Again, it's that old Western fat and lazy attitude. Hey, it didn't happen in my street. It didn't happen in my town. So what do I care? By the way, you know, let's go watch Golden Bachelor and see who wins. Let's talk about Donald Trump's hair. These things, our sense of proportion and our sense of importance has been so totally perverted. And I blame a lot of it on the mainstream media. And also, I think, as your previous guest was pointing out, you know, a lot of teachers at all levels of our educational system are happy to point out that America is a terrible place.
Yep.
Our parents are stupid. And that anything that resembles a conservative idea must be devil inspired. And so Hong Kong's fall, and not total fall, there's still business being conducted there, but it's all under the auspices of the Chinese Communist Party,
right,
was a test for them. If we can take Hong Kong down without the world reacting, let's think about Taiwan next.
Relative to that, I want to move to another piece to that. That's something that you mentioned earlier about the incentives and kind of how they control. There's a film called Finding Courage, and it's the story of the Falun Gong to a degree, but it's a particular family. And the brother was tortured for 12 years. The sister was killed in one of the labor camps. They actually have on video, the commandant of that camp. They went in with undercover video, and then five of the guards defected, and they actually talk about the incentive and how they were incentivized, that every time that they tortured, they were given more money. And without any kind of moral barometer, that was the driving force. But they reached a place where they couldn't get paid enough, And their conscience pricked them, if you will. Do you think that might be the Achilles heel to this whole concept? That Steve Bannon talked about this about 6-7 years ago. He gave a lecture about capitalism without morality, and how basically it would implode without any kind of a moral compass.
Wow, that's a lot of turf to cover. yeah, I know about the Finding Courage movie. It continues. It's not just the Falun Gong who essentially have only asked to be allowed to pray in public, but that of course is too much for China.
Right.
It goes on now, and the Uyghur Muslim minority of China, which is located mostly in a Xinjiang province in the southwest, has been incarcerated by the millions. There are literally, we're not fantasizing here. There are millions of Uyghurs who are being kept in cells, in dungeons, in Xinjiang province of China. They're being tortured. They're being forced to work monotonous assembly line jobs where they make every kind of product, including, and I just can't believe that I'm saying this, including they manufacture American flags and send them to the United States for sale. So, you know, there's just no bottom to the cynicism. There's no limit to the evil to which the Chinese Communist Party won't go to maintain control. It's not so much to make money, it's to control the population. And again, it's a test case. If we can control Hong Kong without starting a world war, if we can essentially preside over the genocide of the Uyghur minority in China without the world reacting, then what's to stop us from going into Taiwan, taking back this province that we've always said is ours, and that the rest of the world says, no, it's an independent country. Mm-hmm. We've seen that they don't do anything, meaning the West.
Right.
So let's just do what we want.
Well, and they also, I mean, the Uyghurs aren't the only ones. They also persecute Christians. I mean, Christianity is severely persecuted in China. For years, there's had to have been an underground Chinese church, but and they have pretended at times that they have a quote-unquote church. You've seen the Pope go over and make deals with the CCP, which it has been an atrocity, quite frankly, as far as Christianity is concerned, because it has essentially been, as you said, it's the West essentially saying, go ahead and do whatever you want to do. We're not going to pay any attention to it.
Yeah. You know, years ago, I lived in what was then Soviet Russia. I lived in Moscow for a couple of years.
Mm.
And I'll get to the point about the Chinese in just one second. But
yep.
And the Soviet Communist Party also said, well, sure, we have freedom of religion here. There are Catholic churches here. So I said, well, I'd like to go see one. And they said, well, I'm not sure about that. But so I finally got permission to go in and permission to go into a church.
Right.
That's what we're talking about here.
Yep.
Permission. And I went in. And the priest who presided over this so-called parish came up to meet me and said, hello. And I said, hi, could you tell me a little bit about your Sunday services and how many? He said, could you please leave? I don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah.
And he was in charge of the parish.
Yep.
That's what the Chinese do. They put up a Potemkin village. Sorry for the mixed metaphors here.
Right.
They
you're right. I get it.
They put up a Potemkin village of a church and threaten the priest, so-called priest, who's in charge of it, and they say, you let people in here and they start praying, it's going to be your cassock we take off first. And that's exactly what they do. And it's all hidden behind lies. It's hidden behind smoke screens.
Yep.
And again, the rest of the world, and I'm sorry, Pastor, I have to focus on Americans. They don't care. It didn't happen next door to me. It didn't happen down the street. So I don't care.
Well, I think I
want to see my new sitcom and see what's going on there.
To your point, John, we're watching that right now on the streets of America when it comes to this issue of Hamas and Israel. I mean, Americans, by and large, are kind of asleep, laissez-faire. And yet you have these marches that are taking place, and that is growing around the country. You have Jewish students, Jewish businesses in our communities that are being attacked, that are not able to, you know, you had the Cooper's Union situation where they weren't able to leave the library, and there's like a blip of coverage, but then it just goes away over the weekend. I mean, there were, I think, two or three incidences where you had, Muslim immigrants, not necessarily here, but in several, France was one that I know of. The UK was another one. We may even have had one here. I'm trying to remember if we did. But at any rate, where there were knifings. Oh, no, we did have one here. We did have one here. Where we had, there were, I think it was six youth that were attacked by knife, and one was killed.
Right. Pastor, it's we're in the Republic of Dementia right now, and we forgot what happened in Germany. We forgot what happened in Poland because it's too long ago. Most people weren't born then. They don't know what the Nazis are. They don't know what Kristallnacht was because it's too long a word for them to spell. With regard to the Cooper Union, where you pointed out that, you know, the Jewish students had to stay in the library in order not to be attacked, I thought that was a beautiful image and a way of looking at the situation. The Jewish students had to stay in a place where you learn things, in the library, where a place of education. And so that's where they stayed. And the Jew haters, the Hamas supporters, et cetera, were outside trying to break windows and deface the building and get in and do damage. I mean, those were the two philosophies that you saw expressed in the images of the Cooper Union. Education versus riotous misbehavior.
It's one of those, you know, where people have said, you know, never again, never again. Unfortunately, never again is truly now.
Well, yeah, I mean, never again, of course, used to be two sacred words to the Jewish people. Now it's just a slogan, and anybody can use it. The Black Lives Matter can use it. Nazi Party of America can use it. Anybody. And it's been debased, just like so many other words in our English language have been debased and used to misrepresent what they originally stood for. So, yeah, we just watch all this or, you know, read about it. If anybody still has a newspaper, read about it online or in the newspaper and just say, huh, wow, that's too bad. No, that's not how Americans are supposed to react to things like that. We are a free people for the moment, and we're supposed to express our views on things, not in a violent way, not in breaking windows and burning cop cars, but in having serious debates with people with whom we disagree, but with whom we can still argue peacefully and come to some sort of conclusions.
Well, and that is our hope is that, you know, we will get back to the values that this country, I believe, was founded on, which are biblical Christian values. And really, you know, if you talk to the people over in China, swinging this all the way back over there, if you talk to the people that you're able to reach in China, they'll tell you that the only way to topple Xi ultimately is going to be an ability to be able to return to that. There are God-fearing people in China, and really they understand that the need for God and that spiritual component is the critical element, and that's the reason why there's such oppression on that within the CCP.
Well, you know, Pastor, while I was researching this book, Just Another Country, I came upon a resource that I had never known existed, and those were English language chat sites in China. Mm. And, of course, you know, so we're talking about English. So these were English speakers, Chinese English speakers, which said a certain amount about their education to start with. But the chats, the interchange of opinions was astounding. This was China we're talking about. And there were groups that were saying, you know, what we're being told by the government about this virus is wrong. It's a lie. What we're being told by the Chinese Communist Party about the economy is a lie. Now, I was able to join some of these groups as an observer, of course. I didn't want to take part. But the openness and the candor that you encounter on these groups was simply astounding. And I started to write it down. I started to copy pages of these chats. To my great dismay, most of them have disappeared, and I have no idea of what happened to the people on them. I have no way of contacting those people, but most of those have been taken down, and which means a channel for honest communication in China.
Wow. Well, not surprising. I mean, this is the kind of censorship, right, that we're experiencing right here in our own country as well. You know, if you're not towing a certain line, if you're not going along with certain statements, you run the risk of having your content removed, taken down, destroyed. I experienced that with Vimeo. Fortunately, we were able to capture, but they took down about 2.5 years worth of programming because they didn't like what I had to say. Final thoughts, and then we got to jump out.
The book is the third part of a trilogy that I started in 2020 because I realized what was going on with COVID. Again, I hate using that word. So this is the final part. This tries to pull all the threads together. I hope your listeners and viewers will give it a chance. It's called Just Another Country, and it's devoted to all those Americans who think America is not just another country.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. John, thank you so much for being with me today. I greatly appreciate it, sir.
Pastor, a pleasure. God bless.
God bless you. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more Chosen Generation Radio coming up right after this brief break.
So up next, we have Clanslight. When you have different things like...
So up next, we have Clanslight. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related...
Hi, this is Pastor Greg, and you're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at ChosenGenerationRadio.com. That's Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any difference. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear, even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com, coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen-size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king-size regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
So up next, we have Clanslight. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. Clanslight is a formula that's made from a natural orthosilic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your clean slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your clean slate today.
You can support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation by visiting www.chosengenerationradio.com.
Thanks so much for being with us. I know you have a choice of where you can listen each and every day, and I thank you for keeping it tuned here to Chosen Generation Radio. Well, I'm very pleased to welcome my next guest to the program, Robert Spencer. Jihad Watch is with us, jihadwatch.org. And, Robert, it is such a pleasure to have you with me. Thank you for being here.
It's good to see you, Pastor, and thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, I'm man, oh man. Well, let me just start with this. As you look at the protests that have gone on the streets of America in favor of Hamas, does any of this really surprise you?
I wish I could say it did, but it doesn't. This is the fruit of 20 years, 30 years, even 50 years of far left miseducation and propaganda in our schools, teaching a lot of lies about that conflict in particular, and many other things in general. They have generally told students that this Israeli-Palestinian conflict is one of oppressor versus oppressed, white versus brown, all their usual nonsense that they push on us in so many contexts. And this one is one of the most egregious, because what we actually have is Israel, a one single Jewish state in the world, up against 22 giant Arab Muslim states that want to destroy it, as well as all the Muslim non-Arab states. And the idea that the Palestinians are oppressed is belied by the fact that Israeli Arabs have equal rights in Israel, serve in the Knesset, are found at every stratum of society, whereas the Palestinian leaders, including Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, have made it clear that not a single Jew would be allowed in a future Palestinian state. And so actually, the left, when they're marching for Hamas, they're on the side of genocide, of apartheid, of all the things that they claim to be against.
It's really stunning to me that we have this situation where the amount of disinformation that is being propagated and our universities. I mean, USC, UCLA, Harvard, Princeton. I mean, it's across the spectrum. How much of an influence do you think that that's having?
Oh, it's an immense influence. That's really probably, in most cases, all that the marchers, the demonstrators, have ever learned about this conflict, because the professors, they preach it from a Marxist perspective, from the perspective of all this critical race theory nonsense that they've been pushing on students. And the students don't have any other frame of reference. It's not as if they're going to get to hear the Israeli side or any other opposing point of view. The universities nowadays don't allow opposing points of view. Right. They only allow the far left point of view to be heard. And so for many of these students, that's the only thing they have to go on.
How do we break that barrier? I know you've been fighting this for years, and really, I hesitate to say it, but I think it's a fact. I think you've been very prophetic in what you've said, and I think that what you have warned about for the last 20 years is really what's coming to fruition, and we are really at a boiling point right here in our country.
Yeah, absolutely. And the only thing we can do is start to hold the universities accountable. I think that federal funding needs to be withheld from the universities if they only allow one point of view and allow speakers who are dissidents to be shouted down or prevented from speaking altogether. That kind of thing has to not be tolerated if we are going to restore any semblance of the idea of universities as actual institutions of higher learning. And so one of the biggest problems that we have is that these universities are rolling in money. They have these massive endowments and so on. They need to actually not just get the federal funding removed, but also be fined with very large fines if they don't respect the First Amendment and the freedom of speech on campuses, which goes for pretty much all of them nowadays.
What has been, I guess, the biggest surprise to you in the midst of any of this? Has there been anything about this that has shocked you?
I wish I could say that there had been surprises, but unfortunately, the hatred for Israel, the open support for the jihad terrorists of Hamas, the love for the Quran, anybody could have seen all this coming in the teachings in the universities about Islamophobia, of the wholly uncritical view that they've presented of Islam and the Quran, while presenting tremendously negative views of Judaism and Christianity. It was really only a matter of time before our students were going to say, hey, Islam is great. We should all be embracing Islam, which is what we're seeing now with this TikTok rage for Osama bin Laden, and unfortunately a lot of people converting. I think they're going to have a tremendous amount of buyer's remorse once they learn more about Islam, about the real thing versus what they've learned in universities. But by then, it may be too late for many of them.
Now, there's been within, as I'm sure you followed, the conservative movement, there's been some real upheaval related to Israel and I guess, you know, the support of Israel, as it were. David Horowitz, who launched the career of Candace Owens, they have come out and cut ties with her relative to comments and statements that she's made about Israel, and her joining in with an Andrew Tate. Can you speak to that, and why do you think that someone like a Candace Owens is going along with the Palestinian Hamas dialogue?
I think that unfortunately the America First idea has been hijacked by people who are frankly anti-Semitic. They hate Jews, they hate Israel, they don't want to see America allied with Israel, and so they present the America First idea as if America should not have allies. And that's not really what America First ought to be. Certainly I am America First in the sense of being against all the irresponsible interventionism and all the wars that have been fought that had no purpose and no end point, but were solely fought for the profit of the military-industrial complex, the misadventures in Iraq and Afghanistan, and unwinnable or wars that we weren't even trying to win, going back to Vietnam and Korea. But that doesn't mean that I think that America ought to be alone on the global stage and not have any genuine allies. And the idea that we should abandon Israel to the same jihadis who hit us on 9/11 is, I think, short-sighted, and ultimately will result in the emboldening of those jihadis as they come after us once again. And so Candace Owens doesn't, I think, realize who she's aligning with or what the implications of that alliance really are.
You know, it really, I'll be honest, because it started out on the day of this attack, on the 7th of October, I was looking around trying to find people that were actually speaking truth. And I ran into a huge issue with regards to that. I decided to jump on myself, and then I ended up being able to connect with my friend Dr. David Wormser, who was in Tel Aviv. But Steve Bannon came out and made some very derogatory statements initially about Netanyahu and Israel. Charlie Kirk came out and made some of the same kinds of comments and statements. Now, I was able to, through some back roads, to send some information off to, you know, to Charlie, and he seems to have really come back around, and he's, you know, seems to really be on the right side today. But I was very concerned about where, as you said, the America First movement was going, and what they were saying, which I felt was very not helpful to it, in light of the fact that what's happened in Israel, the judicial, the battle that was going on in order to give conservatives a voice, the very liberal assault that was taking place within Israel against the actual values that represent the Israeli people. All of that was very similar to the fight that we're fighting here, the moral struggle, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I think the problem with the America First crowd originates with Nick Fuentes, who just seems to be completely dedicated to defaming Israel and turning Americans away from it. And he has, to a tremendous degree, been responsible for the identification of America First with opposition to Israel and with outright anti-Semitism, denying the Holocaust and all the rest of it. Others, though, who are more mainstream, like Charlie Kirk, really ought to, I applaud your work in getting them to reconsider the stances that they were taking, because there's nothing really America First about abandoning an ally that faces the same foe that we face. And so the problem is kind of twofold, in that after 9/11, we were lied to about Islam and about what hit us on 9/11, and now we're being lied to about what's going on in Israel.
Well, and I think, you know, as you and I have discussed before, the historical assault against America was as it specifically relates to Islam. Islam has been at war with America going back to Tripoli. I mean, you know, they declared war on our country literally from its inception. And, you know, explain to people how it is that in Islam, when they believe that they have subjugated you, that they have this belief, and it has existed for 200 years now, right, that they must conquer our country, because Jefferson and Adams, not knowingly, but were paying tribute, which they looked at as druzia, which they looked at as a subjugation of our nation.
Jefferson and Adams actually spoke with the Moroccan ambassador, and he was very clear to them that they were making war against the United States because of the teachings of the Quran, which called for warfare against unbelievers and their subjugation, and that they considered this payment of this tribute to be an aspect of that subjugation. And so consequently, they decided that there would not be any more of this payment, and America went to war against the Barbary pirates. That was, I believe, the first war after the revolution that the United States fought.
Yeah.
And it was against jihadis. The Marines were founded in order to fight in that war, and they were called leathernecks because they actually wore leather collars to prevent the Moroccan jihadis from beheading them, as they tend to do.
Yeah.
So America's history with the jihad goes way back. In the new book, Empire of God, I speak about the Byzantine Empire and its 800-year struggle against jihad. This is a 1,400-year war that they're fighting, and most Americans are not aware.
Well, and I think most Americans don't understand, because there is, even within the America First movement, again, the idea that, well, you know, the reason we got a problem is because we've picked a fight with a billion people, and that's the reason we've got this battle. And the reality is that has absolutely nothing to do with this. The fight with the billion people was picked by them against us, and as we're explaining, folks, it goes back 240 years to Tripoli and to their determination that they wanted to conquer this nation. And, you know, a lot of people forget also the whole issue with Bergdahl, right, and his father and the things that he said. Can you speak to that for a moment? You got him muted. You got him muted.
I keep hitting the buttons. Can you hear me?
Yeah, got you now. Go ahead. Perfect.
Yes, yeah. Bergdahl was an example of the wrong-headed kind of policy decisions that are made when the people making them have no idea what they're dealing with. They were making a gesture of goodwill to the Taliban, the Obama administration, in trading all these Taliban jihadis back to Afghanistan in exchange for this soldier who had actually deserted, and nobody should have been traded for him at all. But yeah. In any case, the Taliban jihadis then went back right back to the jihad, and a lot of them were among the people who took Kabul in August 2021. So we were essentially restocking the ranks of the enemy, and the Biden regime just forced the Israelis to do the same thing in this hostage deal, which freed a lot of jihadis who are just going to go back to the jihad. But since in Washington they don't even recognize that there is a jihad, they never pay attention to those eventualities.
Robert, I appreciate that, and I appreciate your gentleness, I guess, as you're speaking about them. But there are many of us who believe, and I know my friend Phil Haney believed this, who I believe was murdered. Phil Haney believed that the Obama administration and now following the Biden administration knew exactly what they were doing when they placed these specific and strategic jihadis within the U.S. government, by the way. Look at what happened with Iran. You have Batari and then you have Tabatabai, Ariana Tabatabai, and Robert Robert Malley. Yeah. I mean, these individuals were in key positions to provide Iran, which we now know it was Iran and Russia that were a part of the cyber attack against Israel on the 7th of October, and spent the last 2 years helping Hamas to plan this attack. But, you know, these individuals were a part of the Biden administration.
Oh, yeah. And as far as I know, Pastor, the a lot of them are still in place. I don't believe that Tabatabai has been removed, even though the Iranian spy ring has been uncovered and Mali, the ringleader, was dismissed. The Iranians are still in place. And that's just criminal irresponsibility or outright treason on the part of the Biden regime. But, of course, they control the Justice Department and everybody who would be prosecuting them. And so nothing happens.
Well, and this was the thing that, you know, that Phil talked a lot about. You know, I mean, this was what he identified as a part of DHS, which is what, you know, when he writes the book, See Something, Say Nothing, you know, he talks about his journey, because he was identifying that the Obama administration was placing individuals that he had screened and identified as being terrorist threats in key advisory positions within our intelligence apparatus.
Yep. And none of that has changed. As a matter of fact, of course, we know that the Biden regime is essentially Obama's third term. And a lot of those people just came right back into the government and even were promoted in many cases. So it's no surprise, really, that this is such an America Last regime, because we have people, it's essentially a traitor class that is running it, a group that is full of socialists, internationalists, who want to destroy the nation state and create this international conglomerate of an authoritarian socialist state. And these are the people running the American government right now.
Well, and I think that they're using the jihadi terrorist activity and the assault against our country by these terrorists, that they're using that to kind of clear the table, if you will, of those of us that would speak up and speak out to call them to the carpet for what it is that they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. The people who speak up are targeted by, in the first place, we had the Biden attempt to create a disinformation governance board, ominously within the Department of Homeland Security. We had it working with Twitter and the other social media giants to silence dissidents. Those operations were exposed, and they had to close their disinformation governance board. But it's not as if the Biden regime has suddenly become a lover of the freedom of speech. It still wants to crush dissent. That's one of the reasons why it's prosecuting Trump on all these, so to speak, trumped-up charges. The fact is that there has never been an American president or a former president who has been tried before. And a lot of these are misdemeanors, elevated to felonies, that kind of thing. Whatever you think of Trump, this is clearly an anti-democratic attempt to crush opposition to the existing regime. And that is a severe threat to all of us.
All right. In our final moments here, I want to get back to your book for a minute. Again, Empire of God, How the Byzantines Saved Civilization. I assume that in the book that you talk a little bit about the Crusades, because the Crusades are really what turned the tide when it comes to this, but they have been reframed in history as, oh, this would, you know, they were bad. You had movies that have been put out by Hollywood that have attempted to create the idea that all the Crusaders were the problem. Speak to that for a moment, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. The Crusaders play a big part in this book. It's a history in large part, although there's much more to it, of 800 years of holding out against the jihadis. The Crusaders were an attempt to defend the Byzantine Empire and the surrounding regions against the advancing jihadis. They've been reframed nowadays as imperialists who came down gratuitously upon the poor innocent Muslims who weren't doing anything. This is historically false and ridiculous, but it's part of the self-hatred that is inculcated among Westerners today, that we are supposed to have contempt for our own history and traditions. Even sports teams that used to be named Crusaders because people were proud of the Crusaders have now all been renamed. And it is the general tendency to hate our own history, to think of the West as made up of racists and imperialists and so on. This book is an attempt to redress that and to awaken people to the fact that we do have a great history to be proud of as Westerners.
Yeah, the whole concept of colonizers and you know, we just celebrated Thanksgiving, and now all of a sudden that's become, oh my gosh, you're a right-wing racist, I don't know what, you know, if you're, and by the way, PETA's not happy with you because you're killing turkeys. You're angering all of them. There's no reference to the pilgrims, no reference to the religious persecution that happened, no reference to them coming over and bringing the gospel and the Mayflower Compact that said that was one of their most important messages as the pilgrims. And by the way, my family was on the Mayflower. We've traced ourselves back to that. It's just stunning how all of that has been rewritten now, and it is you cannot fight this fight, I think, against this jihadi attack and assault with both hands tied behind your back.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. And we have to, in the first place, understand that we have something worth defending. And so that means recovering an understanding of an appreciation for our own history and where we've been. And so that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book.
Empire of God, How the Byzantines Saved Civilization. Folks, I encourage you to get this book. I know Robert. I've known Robert for years now. And I know that the research that he does that goes in to the books that he puts together and the importance and the accuracy of the history. And I can't tell you how important right now it is for us to understand the true heart of those that were fighting for the very ideals that are the basis and the foundation of the United States of America. And now more than ever, we need to understand this. Empire of God, How the Byzantines Saved Civilization. Robert, I hope we can get some Byzantine type of fervor growing right here in our own nation. Otherwise, I'm afraid that our civilization is going to tank.
That's for sure. I couldn't agree more. I hope that this becomes the beginning of it.
Amen. Amen. Robert, thank you for all that you do. I greatly appreciate it. Jihadwatch.org. Jihadwatch.org is the website. Please be sure that you're following them, and if you can, offer support. I know they appreciate that. Robert, thank you for all that you do for our country and all that you do for our faith.
Thank you. Thank you. Likewise.
All right, we're going to take our leave. We'll be back with you tomorrow. You've been watching Chosen Generation Radio here on TECN-TV and also listening to us across all of our podcasts as well. Thank you again so much for being with me. God bless you, and I pray that you will have a blessed rest of your day. Turning things over now to our good friends at Texas Fully Loaded, coming up right here on TECN-TV.